following sermon by Rabbi Joshua Davidson was recorded on Friday, August 19th, 2016.
Dear friends, the hype and hysteria of the presidential campaign reminds me how much I used to enjoy the West Wing. The long-running television series about President Josiah Bartlett, played by Martin Sheen, and his eccentric but lovable White House staff. Obviously, you remember the show. My favorite episode centered on Bartlett's re-election campaign and his preparation for the final debate with his Republican challenger. 10 words, his advisors admonished the loquacious and sometimes pedantic Bartlett. Keep your answers simple. 10 words. 10 words. 10 words, Bartlett nods as if trying to convince himself. The debate begins. The moderator poses a question to Governor Robert Ritchie, played by James Brolin. Governor Ritchie, many economists have stated that the tax cut, which is the centerpiece of your economic agenda, could actually harm the economy. Is now really the time to cut taxes? The governor responds, "You bet it is. We need to cut taxes for one reason. The American people know how to spend their money better than the federal government does." Mr. President, your rebuttal, the moderator offers, and Bartlett pounces. "There it is," he says. "That's the 10-word answer my staff's been looking for. 10-word answers can kill you in political campaigns. They're the tip of the sword. Here's my question. What are the next 10 words of your answer? Your taxes are too high, so are mine. Give me the next 10 words. How are we going to do it? Give me 10 after that, and I'll drop out of the race right now." There aren't very many unnuanced moments in leading a country that's way too big for 10 words, the made-for-TV president concludes. 10 words are not enough. Even the Torah acknowledges it. This Shabbat, we read what our tradition calls Aseret HaDibrot, which loosely translates as the 10 words. You've heard them before. "I am Adonai your God. You shall have no other gods beside me. You shall not swear falsely by the name of Adonai your God. Observe the Sabbath day. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet." These are the big 10, the 10 grand moral assertions to which the people of Israel must hold themselves accountable and around which Israelite society is to be ordered. But can you imagine a court attempting to render a judgment based on these 10 words alone? So much remains unspecified. How, for example, does one differentiate between murder and manslaughter? What does it mean to dishonor one's parents? And what are the punishments for these crimes? 10 words are not enough to answer. That is why much of the book of Deuteronomy proceeds to stipulate the specifics. In the chapters that follow this week's Sidra v'Etchanan, the Torah assigns penalties for injuries to prevent excessive punishment of the guilty. It addresses business fraud and the repayment of loans, and mandates such social responsibilities as a homeowner's for the safety of tenants. And in case later generations ever contended that these rules were somehow less binding than the Ten Commandments themselves, the rabbis had prepared their response. Rabbi Ishmael insisted that just as the Ten Commandments were given at Sinai, so were these their applications given at Sinai. Without them, Nachmanides warned, the Israelites would have lacked all sense of how to respect one another or one another's property, and society would have collapsed into utter chaos. What comes after the first 10 words, these fine points, are what matter most. They are what matter most and are most often lacking in political discourse, and they are what matter most in our own lives and interactions. Torah reminds us that life is lived not in the broad brushstrokes, but in the finest details. We know from our own relationships that grand pronouncements of love and intention ultimately matter very little if we do not make good on them day to day. I'm reminded of my grandfather, who died at this season 21 years ago. His credo was Shammai's teaching from Pirkei Avot: say little, do much. He had gone to work at age 18 in an electronics shop to pay his way through college at night. Pop-Pop, as we called him, was devoted to his family, his children and grandchildren, and would do anything for us. I grew up in a house where we said, "I love you," all the time. So I was accustomed to saying it and hearing it. I remember once, I must have been 5 or 6 years old, sitting in the passenger seat of my Pop-Pop's Cadillac and saying to him, "I love you." There was silence. I looked at him. "I love you," I said again. He hesitated for a moment and then responded, "Good." That was it. I thought about that exchange for a long time. I still find it amusing all these years later. He may not have been comfortable saying the words, but none of us ever doubted how he felt, because he showed us in so many ways. The little things we say and do are what matter most, or the things we fail to say and do. Dr. Rachel Naomi Remen tells the story of Larry, a young husband and father, a passionate environmentalist. His work had begun to consume him. He traveled frequently and worked late into the night on the occasions he was home. There was just so much to be done, another habitat to be preserved, another endangered species to be protected. His wife and children grew accustomed to Larry's absences and eventually took them for granted. After 6 years, Larry visited Dr. Remen. He was depressed, burnt out, angry. "The world is dying," he lamented. "Spotted owls, countless other species. We may not have another chance." Dr. Remen was first silent and then asked, "Larry, when was the last time you ate with your family?" "I don't remember," he answered. "When was the last time you played ball or read a book to your children?" "I don't remember," he said. "When was the last time you and Deborah went for a vacation together, just the two of you?" "I don't remember. I guess it's been a long time." To which Dr. Remen responded, "Larry, would you treat a spotted owl that way?" Nowhere do we learn the effort and attention to detail that goes into making a relationship successful better than through the covenant of marriage. Perhaps for this reason, the Midrash chooses to describe the moment of revelation at Sinai as the wedding of God to the people Israel. The rabbis wanted us to understand that our union with God, like a marriage, will take work. So God becomes the groom and Israel the bride. Mount Sinai, their chuppah, the Ten Commandments, their ketubah. Those who marry learn quickly that the grand pronouncements of their wedding day will not in and of themselves hold their marriage together. It is the threads they weave, said the legendary French actress Simone Signoret, the hundreds of tiny threads which sew people through the years. Rabbi Harvey Fields once called it the gritty work of love. What counts in our most important relationships are not the easy grandstand declarations of affection, but all the patient struggles to wrench laughter out of tears, trust out of disillusionment, the commitment to birth new joys out of sorrows, new dialogue out of embittered silence, and new beginnings out of shattered dreams, even when the going gets tough, especially when the going gets tough. The Reverend Morris Joseph served as the senior minister of the West London Synagogue of British Jews from 1893 to 1930. In his work, Judaism as Creed and Life, he wrote, "The divine test of a man's worth is not his theology, but his life. Not our sweeping proclamations, but how we live from day to day, how we treat our husbands and wives, our parents and children, our siblings, friends, and co-workers, and for that matter, ourselves. What matters most are not the first 10 words, but rather, to quote the favorite phrase of that fictional television president, what's next?" In our calendar, Shabbat Nachamu arrives as the first Shabbat of 7, counting down to the High Holy Days. Now begins the time to consider most deeply not only our grand aspirations for the new year ahead, but also, and perhaps most significantly, the smaller steps we might take toward improving our lives and our relationships by examining our everyday interactions and our attitudes towards others and toward ourselves. For in those details is life lived, and life's greatest fulfillment found.